Well, I was born in Bishton Street, which is a couple of roads down from Eaton Road. I grew up there. There was only my brother and I had a lovely childhood. Went to the church, to Community House. It was a church in those days. I went to Sunday school there, and then I went to Maindy School, which was in Maindy then, which is now off Corporation Road. From there on, I went to Newport Tech, and then I worked for, oh gosh, I worked for an estate agent in Baneswell when I first left school. And then when I got married, I worked for Gwent Fasteners. They were a firm from Thomas Lench. They were from up north, selling nuts and bolts, and I worked in the offices there. From there, I went to work. Oh no, I went away because I had a divorce, and I went away for a year in Stoke, working for the post office training centre in their offices, and then I came back to Newport and I married Alan. And from there, I did freelance for a while. I worked for Newport Glass and the Colour Centre for a few years, ran their offices. And then eventually I worked in the office for my husband, doing their wages and all. And that's really when I went to work voluntary. And my solicitor said, I was in there seeing my solicitor over my will. And he said, "Have you ever thought about doing voluntary work?" And I said, "I never thought about anything really." I said, "I just haven't got anything to do." And he said, "Well, do voluntary work." I said, "Yes, fair enough." So I went to, he said, "Go to Gavo." So I went to Gavo and they put me in touch with Wage Concern. Went to Wage Concern, and then I was doing clubs in Goitre, Abergavenny, Usk. And it was called Rural Reminiscence. And used to talk to the members of the club, going back in time and taking them through their childhood up until their present day. Of course, they were all elderly. It was really interesting. I loved it. And then someone from Age Concern was talking to the blind. They wanted someone. They were let down at the last minute. Someone had left the blind club in Community House. And he asked me if I'd be interested. And I said, "Well, I do four clubs." I said, I'd only have one day, and that was the day that I had free, was the Thursday. So I said, "Well, I'll go and try." But I said, "I've never worked with blind people, don't know what it's like." But I said, "I'll give it a try." So I went to Eaton Road, and because it was from the area and from a childhood, it was lovely going back. And went in, met the people, stood in front of them talking, and realised that was it. The other clubs I gave up because I wanted to devote all my time to the blind club. And
so, what way do you think the other clubs prepared you to work with?
Well, it gave me confidence and knowing how to approach elderly people and knowing what their need was. And that was more important than anything. Their need was, they wanted me to get biscuits from the Western Biscuit Factory and things like that, and I started doing that for them, and then from there it progressed. Somebody wanted a Christmas dinner, and so I did a Christmas dinner out there for them. And then of course that was my experience. I gained all experience from that, and then from there I went to it going to Eaton Road, and at Eaton Road I took over from a social worker that had been doing it. And I had the volunteers there, but I brought more of mine came along. And that was Eaton Road. I had a great friend because my husband's partner, he had a mate, and his wife came and helped me, Jen. She was marvellous. So Jen and I did Eaton Road Club back and forth. We went.
How many volunteers would you say you had?
Oh, I expect we must have had about 8 volunteers.
Good. And how many people were in the group?
Oh, we were a group when it originally was 60. Oh yeah, we had 4 buses, and we used to have roughly 15 on each bus. Look, the reason we seemed as though we had a lot of volunteers is because you had to have an escort on each bus. So we had an escort in each bus, and then I would be at Eaton Road waiting for them to come in, and I would have other volunteers there ready with making the tea and all ready for when they come to club.
So where did they come from?
They came from all areas of Newport. Newport was split. We had four social workers at in those days. All of it was scrapped eventually, but there were four social workers, and you had two for Newport East and two for Newport West. And the one half of Newport, you would say you went to Dufferin and all around that area, and then that was the top half of that. Then was Baislig Road, the Gare, and that top end of Newport. Then you came over the other side, and it was Chepstow Road, out as far as Ringland, and then you came the top half of that, which was St Julian's, St Julian's, and all around Beaufort Road. So you had your top and bottom, top and bottom. So you had your four, you know, your four bus loads, and it was lovely there. I mean, when you say community house without Brian Selby wouldn't be community house, because Brian was there every week when we were there. He was always there to welcome anyone, and anyone used to drop in. I mean, it was lovely. But the blind club, we had a waiting list for members. They had to go on a waiting list because we were a full club. And sadly, over the years, I mean, the social workers were taken off. They weren't social workers for the blind anymore. One social worker would have only done blind people. Well, that was all scrapped, and they were amalgamated into all of their clients. So we lost out a lot on that, because we didn't get the members coming through as we were, because you lose a member and you're looking to have another member to fill their shoes. Like,
what do you think the club meant to the people?
Oh, it was everything to them. People who'd never gone out, and not for years, they used to come to club, and they couldn't get in quick enough. And it got at one stage, they used to come off the buses and they would run in to see what was on the produce table. And that was them. They, you know, I mean, they wanted to have a good rumble through and have whatever they wanted. And then they would go in the hall and they would sit down at their table and wait for their friends to come. Because they then, when I first started the club, they were sat in rows in chairs. And one day we had a mishap. Somebody tipped a cup of tea on them, and I had to take my half petty off and put it on them, you know, just make do for them. And so from that, I said, that's it, no more. We'll have tables and chairs. So I had a word with Brian Selby. Brilliant. Brian comes up. Yeah, all right, Yvonne, we'll get someone who will put up the tables for you. So they used to put the tables and chairs out for me. And when they came in, they'd be rushing then for their table and their mates. And so they got, although they were on different buses, when they came to club, they weren't on different tables for buses. They were with their friends, so they all came together. Like,
that made a difference to the dynamics of how people interacted with each other.
Yes.
Just by the way the tables were set out.
Yeah, definitely.
And how did you plan activities for the
group? That's right. We had all the different grades of sites. And what we found was, their main thing in life was music. They loved singing, they loved listening to it. And so we then, for entertainment, our entertainment, instead of normally you'd go to a club like, and you might do handicrafts and things like that. Well, all of that was out of the door. You couldn't do that with my lot. So we would have people come along and give us entertainment. Well, we had the Alcan Choir, who are still going. We had Beaufort Road Church, their choir used to come. We had an accordion club came from Caldecott. We had Sylvia came, as she was a pianist. Mary came, she was a pianist, and they used to sing. And they used to get them all to participate. They would all sing and join in. And then you would get some who were a little bit more willing to have a go, would get up and go out the front and have a sing, would sing for them. So it was lovely, because they used to say it was their one day where they could meet friends and they were safe. They were brought there and they were taken home. And a lot of them, you've got to realise that they didn't have families. You know, a lot of them were widows. had no one. Their family had perhaps grown up, moved away, so there was no one local. So it was one way of having someone local. And lots of them got friendly out of club, and they used to phone one another up, which is lovely, because the association, Gwent Association for the Blind, did... they did a call service where they would ring around and they would ring around members. But it's not the same when someone's ringing around from an office as ringing up one of the people that you've met in club and saying, oh, how is so-and-so? How's your daughter? How's the baby? And it's that sort of spirit that they all got chatting to one another. You know, it was just a lovely club and I loved it. And I mean, when I had to give it up because I had two hip replacements. I know I missed it. I did, but and they let it run down. Because the social workers, by the time I had my hips done, the social workers didn't come to club. We didn't have the special social workers anymore. And if they wanted anything, I used to tell them at club, ring social services, get a social worker. You've lost your ordinary social workers, your specials, so you now got to keep on and keep ringing and make a nuisance of yourself to make sure that you get attention and you get what you want, because they were isolated. You live in a world of your own when you can't see. To be deaf is to be able to see danger. To be blind, you can't see danger. And that's, it's a big thing. And that's what I learned by going there and seeing how they were, that they did have a need. And I mean, I loved it. And I think it's lovely to be able to have a club. And I know it's not segregation, but a club where they are all in the same position of sight loss, from small sight loss to totally blind. A lot of my members were blind from birth. And that's a different blindness. People who come blind in later life, or partially sighted, a lot of them are very bitter when they first lose their sight. And that they're an entirely different person to the ones who were born blind. Because bearing in mind, I don't know if they still got them, but they used to go to a blind school. So they grew up and they had friends from the blind school. Like two of my one member, her and her husband, they both met at blind school. And they were both of them totally blind from birth. But they lived together and they made a life. You said you recognised Rose with her dog. Well, that was Rose was with her dog. It was Rose and Cyril. And they married and they lived in Newport off Corporation Road, a couple of roads down from the club. And they were lovely. And everyone knew Rose because she used to walk around with the dog on a lead.
So what you knew, what you gathered about the different people, then you were able to organise the activities to suit them.
Yes.
And so that also gave you the role of a treasurer and...
Oh, and I took over that. Yes, yeah, I took over that.
Entertainment to come in. So what did you do in your...
I used to get entertainment. I used to pay, they were very good, the people who came. And I used to give them, if it was taxi they came by, we'd pay for their taxi. And if they had a small fee, because they were doing it for charity, we would give a fee. Well, to make that, we had a produce table, and we used to sell. I used to go to Aldi's and buy food there, bacon, eggs, and things that they would use. And then we'd have them on the table and sell them. Biscuits, that was one of their things, was biscuits, cake. And we had, as I say, we had this table, and that was every week. And then... that made money. We also, in the summer months, Alan, my husband, we had a big garden out in Mathen, and he used to grow kidney beans, cucumbers, tomatoes, and we sold all that in club, but I would sell it very near to the prices in the shops. they didn't have anything for nothing because they were all able to pay, so they would pay for it, and all that money went into our accounts. And then what I would do was I would book out, if we had a lot of money in the balance, I would take them out for lunch, and we would go down, perhaps we'd go to the Waterloo, or we'd go to, where else? So we've gone through all sorts of places for a meal, and we'd pay for the meal out of it. And then every year we used to go to Weston for the day. We paid for the coach and we paid for the lunch in a first class hotel. We never went in little cafes. It was a first class hotel. When I first took over the club, they used to go to, the first time I went, they took me on the bus and we went on a coach trip to Weston, and I'm green now, totally green, because I only been going there for about a month or two. And this comes up, and so you go there. And we get to at Weston on the front. They stop the bus, they unload the bus, and they say, right, we'll see you at 1 o'clock over at that restaurant there. And they say the name of it, Sandbanks or something like that. And that would be it, and you'd be there for 1 o'clock. But they were left. Now, to me, morally wrong, didn't like that at all. So the following year, I took them to Weston. I booked a hotel. I'd gone over there and arranged with the hotel to have a big function room so that we could have it laid up properly. And they were all there. And I arranged for them to stay in the hotel afterwards. If it was raining, they would be safe. And if they wanted to go out, they would have one of the volunteers to take them. But all the money for the meals came out of our fundraising. And then we had Jennifer, my friend, my partner, that she used to do. Jen used to do the second-hand stall. So if we had any clothes, anything at all, bric-brac, we would take it to club, and Jen would walk around the hall all afternoon and she'd sell it all. Our money then into the funds. Again, it was a good fundraiser. And that's how we made our funds. And then we would have, once a year, we would have a fundraising day where we'd have cake stall. Jen used to make Barra Brith and all big cakes. I used to make a dozen apple tarts and a dozen corned beef tarts. And other people, volunteers, would bring along things. And our chairman, Fred, my cousin, he was the chairman, and Fred's wife used to make fancy cakes, and she would bring bring in trays of fancy cakes. Before he got a club, his bus were booking the cakes. It was lovely. And Jen used to do a bus, and Jen's, all her cake was always all ordered and all. So you'd come in and you'd have your cake day and fundraising, and we'd have the cakes, and then we'd have another table with all gifts that people hadn't wanted, and we used to collect an awful lot of that, and we'd put it all out on the table. We'd sell all that. So we had a good way of raising funds, but you always had to make sure that there was never anyone, every penny went in, everyone was honest, and you had to be very careful because of them being blind, because they would come in and they would give you their purse. Now, that's a trust, and you can't break that trust. So we would have their purse, take their money out, serve them, tell them exactly what we were giving them, and give it back. It was just lovely. It was like family. It just felt like a family club. And of course, because I'm from the area, I knew such a lot of them, and a lot of their families had grown up, you know, and I was able to go around and talk to them about their families.
Difference.
Yes.
So going forward, if somebody wanted to set up a club similar to what you were doing, and you ran that club for about 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of person would, what kind of qualities would that person need?
Well, first of all, it's a love of people, of mixing with people, and all sorts of people. No colour, no, just somebody who loves to be with people, to mix and to see people enjoy and want to come, because you don't force people to come to a club. They come of their own volition. They do, either they want to or they don't want to. And the person who leads that club has got to make it that they want to come. There's something going on there that I don't want to miss out on. And that's, you know, and that's the way to sort of bring them in. I think that it's a lovely vocation. It's lovely to be able to do it. It's more satisfying than any job I ever had. I mean, I worked for the Colour Centre. I worked in their offices, ran their offices for those. And I worked in the glass for the Newport Glass as well there. But job satisfaction is not the same as the satisfaction of running a club and knowing that everyone's enjoying it, they're getting something out of it, and you're giving something back into society. You know, it's a lovely, lovely thing to do.